You're listening to Mostly Technical, which is brought to you by Lair Jobs, the official Laravel job board, and screencasting.com, where you can learn how to create high-quality screencasts faster than ever. Now, Ian and Aaron.
Hello.
Hello, the gifted takes men. Did you see that on Twitter? Somebody called you. I know you saw it. You retweeted it.
So exciting.
Man. I knew. As soon as he called you a gifted takes man, I was like, oh no, this is going to be Ian's new identity.
What a way with words. I was thinking like a neon sign, like right up here behind me, like the gifted takes men, just like maybe an arrow.
Yeah.
Like that. I mean, keep it subtle,
I'm totally here for it.
Well, a lot's happened since last recording just a week ago.
Yeah.
A lot going on.
Should we bury the lead and not talk about it for like 45 minutes and
maybe
make people...
Socks? Should we still talk about socks?
Yeah. Talk about socks and diapers minutes? For 45
yeah.
minutes.
Yeah, maybe a little Diet Coke segment. I actually do have a Diet Coke segment in here, to be honest with you. But
it's good. There's a lot of Diet Coke content.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe you want to hit us up with what's going on. It was a little back.
I got laid off. So in a way, Ian, you and I are the same because we don't have bosses, right? So we're just like, you know, it's great. It's a good feeling. I love not having
a
boss.
Awesome.
So I got laid off from PlanetScale last week, that's correct. I do not have a boss. However, I also don't have any income. So I think that's maybe the biggest.
That's the biggest problem.
Yeah,
that's a bit of a problem. Okay,
so getting laid off, great for content.
Yo.
So great for content. Is you gotta
follower
get content
numbers
for,
through the roof?
Oh my gosh!
This is gonna be our biggest
so
episode
followers.
By far. It's gonna be crazy.
Exactly. So listen, let's do it a little bit up at the top here. You should subscribe to this podcast. I know you're just
subscribe.
Here because I got laid off, and it's a juicy thing. Listen, I don't care if you're just here to hear the layoff story. That's great. Go ahead and subscribe. I don't have any money. I got a million kids. We don't even do ads on this show, but maybe one day. But yeah. You know what would make me feel great? If you subscribed, dear listener, that would be amazing. Or maybe even tweet at us. That would be awesome.
That would be awesome. You're going to love it. Everybody loves the
You're
show.
You're
going to
love
Welcome.
It. It's hysterical. We barely talk about anything, but it's the funniest thing in the world. So stay a while.
Yes. Thank you for joining us. You're laid off.
I'm laid off.
I guess I do want to say up front that, you know, you're working out your severance agreement. That's all a little bit in flux. So there's going to be some things you can't talk about. So I might have a little bit of an Ian's corner here and there to talk about some things you might not be able to chime in on.
You can have as many corners as you want, and I will just smile along.
For people who aren't aware, too, even after, you know, literally like 100% of the time, when you have a severance agreement, like you're going to have various non-disclosure clauses and things. So there's going to be some stuff you can just never talk about. The other employees at PlanetScale are never going to be able to talk about. So, or the former employees. So that's just the way it goes. But I think we'll be able to cover quite a bit here. And I will
see. This is why I'm glad you're business dad, because you're the reasonable adult in the room. You know all of this stuff.
I've had to do them, so I know.
Like.
Yeah, it's not fun, but it is what it is. So, all right. So what happened? So last Monday, I mean, we were talking about the YouTube channel and how much you've grown it. And
I know
the studio you're building, and like we were literally talking about this stuff last week. Tuesday, you're like, hey, guess what? I got laid off. So
imagine my embarrassment.
Yeah.
Imagine coming on the show and being like, I'm ready to get back at it, baby.
Right.
And then
back off maternity leave. That's right. Maternity leave was over last Friday or whatever it was. Like,
yeah.
Oh,
I was supposed to come
gosh.
Back on Friday, and then on Wednesday I got laid off. So yeah, a little bit of egg on my face there, because I'm like, let's get back at it. Let's make some waves. I did make some waves, however. As
you did
made sympathetic waves instead of impressive waves, but
yes.
Waves nonetheless.
Yep.
So yeah, I was finishing out the studio, which looks great, by the way.
I
don't know if
you've
seen pictures, but
yes.
Aaron Francis' studio of light and sound looks amazing.
Much better name, by the way, too.
Yeah,
the
name, we're already
a big upside here is that the name is way, way better. So
the name is awesome. It's honestly a placeholder name, but I kind of like the wordiness of it. The Aaron Francis Studio of Light and Sound. It's like, wow, that really hits.
It's like got that Zoolander like school for kids who can't read good kind of thing, but like,
yeah,
more positive.
I actually stole the ethos or the feeling from a bit on 30 Rock where Tracy Jordan's fake son opens a karate studio. And it's like the Tracy Jordan Karate Studio Institute of Learning or something. And I was like, that's funny. I kind of like that bit. Yeah. I'm going to steal it. All of my bits are stolen. So
everything.
Yeah. Got laid off on Wednesday. Fortunately I had booked a midday showing of Dune 2. Which you're such a no man because great movie. You're just you and Matt Winsing are just no men. You gotta be a yes man. And I went and saw, so I got laid off and then immediately went and saw Dune 2. And that worked out great. That was like my last week of paternity, like, hey, let's do something you wouldn't normally be able to do. Now I can normally do it every single day. So
you
it's can like,
go to the movies every day. You know, you're going to see Dune 2 special.
Six or seven more times. So many times. I might as well go see it in 70mm now. You know, yeah,
I want to do
that.
Yeah.
Although it is expensive. And as we've discussed, I don't have the money. So we'll see. It was great. Great movie. I went to Alamo Draft House, which is at you least Texans. A thing in the South. I don't know if it exists everywhere.
We do have it exist something up there? Like it in Yonkers, which is like an hour from here.
Yonkers is not a real place.
I have been to it one time, but like it's like a special trip you have to go on. Like I care about this movie enough to like drive an hour and change to go see it.
No. So just a little side tangent, because you know what? What else do I have to do? We started early. We're going to go late.
We can go 4 hours. It doesn't matter.
We got nothing to do. Buckle up, people. So side tangent on Alamo Draft House. It's amazing. If you've ever been to a studio movie grill and you think that it's Alamo Draft House, you're 100% wrong. Studio Movie Grill is like, it's like the lowbrow version of Alamo Draft House. At Alamo, especially the new ones, the ones built in the last, you know, 5-10 years. At Alamo, every seat is a recliner. Every seat has a built-in table, like the, you know, two seats share a table in the middle.
Yeah.
And the best part is, so like, you will get kicked out if you talk or you use your phone. They will kick you out of the theater immediately.
Wow.
You get one warning. And the way that they do it is, so you raise these order, like you write down what your order is and then you raise it up on a little card because there's no talking even amongst the wait staff.
Right.
Studio Movie Grill, they'll walk in the middle of a fight scene of the Avengers and they'll be like, hey, what do you want? I'm like, I'm trying to watch a movie here.
Right.
But at Alamo, you have to write everything down and it's a snitches get riches situation. So if somebody's talking, you can write it down and be like, hey, this guy's talking. And they'll come in and be like, hey, we heard you were talking one more time and you get kicked out. So saw Dune 2 at Alamo and then got out of the movie and was like, oh, shoot, I'm still laid off, aren't I? What do I do? That was fun. What do I do now? And so then, you know, kind of went from there. But yeah, the whole Monday, come on the pod, get ready to get freaking pumped. Wednesday, oopsie doopsie.
So
not super great for ego.
I don't want to go past that. We're already on the side tangent. We got to talk just quickly about Dune 2.
Tell me Dune 2.
So I agree. Like, I like the movie overall. It's a good movie. But
you're going to waffle.
You can't tell me that when Christopher Walken gets on there and he's like, we need more cowbell here, that wasn't distracting. Didn't that pull you out of the movie a little bit? Just his voice. Didn't it pull you out a little bit?
His voice and his, like, his facial expressions.
Yeah, the acting was bad.
It was a surprising casting choice. I'm not going to lie.
Right, it's a little distracting.
Knowing, like, I knew ahead of time that he was in it because you DM'd and are like, it sucks. And I'm like, don't tell me that. Right. So part of me is just wants to be the anti Ian and be like, no, it was great. I loved it. I couldn't even tell it was him.
They did a great job. More. Why wasn't he in two-thirds of the movie?
Yeah, justice for Walken. It was a little bit distracting. In the same way that in Interstellar, great movie, they end up on this planet and wake this guy up and it's a cold Matt Damon. And you're like, what? Yeah, who knew he was here?
Yeah, Matt Damon. Like,
this has got to be an SNL bit. There's no way that Matt Damon just woke up and is wrapped in foil right now.
Right.
A little bit. Too. Yeah, can you imagine being so famous that people are like, yeah, you can't be in that movie.
Right.
It's too distracting.
Yeah.
You got to be a little bit more of a nobody.
Yeah. But I don't know. At least Matt Damon, the acting was good once he woke up and you got past that. Like, Christopher Walken, the acting, the voice, the whole thing. It was like,
you really think they cut a little bit out in post?
Maybe. I mean, it was bad, don't you think? Like, I don't know. Like, he did the whole last scene, he didn't even talk. It's like, he's just standing
That's
there
true.
Weirdly.
He just stood there.
And like, I'm like, it seems like he's supposed to say something, but then he doesn't. Like,
yeah.
It was weird.
This is going to surprise you, since I'm such a connoisseur of the Fast and Furious films, but my bar for movies is not very high.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, there's a little bit about me. Yeah. So I was like, yeah, hell yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Right. Let's do it, baby. The cars are in outer space. Of course they are. This is awesome.
Yeah. Why not?
I was a little distracted throughout the movie.
Just in general.
So I will go see it again, because what do I have to do? And I'll probably honestly see it in 70 millimeter IMAX.
I think that,
because I missed Oppenheimer in 70 millimeter. Oh, awesome. I'm bummed about that.
Yeah. So, I wanted to do that, but I was like, I can't like go all the way. I just wasn't in the mood to go all the way to New York City, which is where I have to go for the 70 millimeter. But I do think that would be an awesome movie, like the big sandworms and stuff. And
as
big as a building. That'd be very cool.
Yeah, no spoilers, but the sandworms are big. Yeah.
Yeah, big sandworms.
They're awesome. Big sandworms.
And I like how most people also, like in this. Yeah, go ahead.
Also, the guy that plays Elvis, the Harkonnen son or nephew or whatever, I think he's the same actor that played Elvis.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Austin Butler or something.
That one.
Yeah, yeah.
He's good.
He was really good. Yeah, he was
great.
And I love all the black and white scenes. Like the black and white scene. Like they used to use more black and white. I love movies in black and white. And I just think like the modern BML, it's like make them really sharp. Like you think of a black and white movie and it's obviously like usually grainy and old and fuzzy a little bit. But like obviously with modern technology, it's like super crisp and sharp. But in the black
super
and white,
crisp,
with the high
almost,
contrast. And
yeah, so what is it? It almost felt like... like it was shot in infrared, you know, it kind of has like that. It's super sharp, but it's also kind of like glowy and the contrast is so high.
Heavy in there into the high contrast. Yeah,
it was really awesome.
That stadium I thought was awesome. I thought it was like one of the best scenes in the whole, that shot of the triangular stadium in black and white. And like the sand is just like blazing white. Like, that was excellent. I loved all that stuff. I loved the Jenny Bezeret who comes and like seduces him or whatever. Like I love the whole thing.
Oh, dude,
the whole thing was good.
The not Jenny Bezeret. That's an Ian. That's gotta be
Benny
an Ianism.
The Jenny Bezeret.
That's Chipotle's or whatever. Jezeret. However you say it. Yeah. The Benny.
Benny Jezeret.
Jenny Bezeret's a friend of mine. Lives down the street. You're thinking of the Benny Jezeret.
Benny Jezeret.
Yeah, great. Love the Benny Jezeret. They're so freaking awesome.
We got more of them in this one, which was awesome. I love all that stuff.
Yeah.
I love what's her name with the tattooed face and like
tattoo face.
The mother.
Awesome.
I
thought about
tattooed
doing it.
Face. Yeah, same.
Yeah, super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, great movie. Movie. Great theater. Highly recommend.
Most people, if they got laid off, went to Alamo Drafthouse, they would drown their sorrows in alcohol.
You stuck with the
Diet Coke.
Well, Ian. You know, it's a little bit about what can you not have. And so it's like, I'm having Diet Coke.
Alcohol.
Yeah. I will say, I also had a Negroni. You know, I'm not a teetotaler. Is that the right word? Teetotaler?
I think so.
teetotaler. How do you say that? Someone who abstains from drinking alcohol. Man, I love it when I nail like on the fly.
Look at you.
A teetotaler.
You still got it.
Teetotaler. I don't know how to say it. I've only ever read it. Yeah. So I had a Negroni and the guy came back and was like, hey, they can't find Negroni back there. And I'm like, well, that's because it's a mixed drink. It's a cocktail. You're going to have to make it. It's not, you're not going to find it. So my confidence has gone down quite a bit. I'll be honest, but I can tell you how to make it. Yeah.
Right.
But you know, it was noon, so I didn't want to have like four cocktails. So I had literally three sodas and a plate of chicken tenders and felt like, this is it. I'm
that
truly living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got a little live photo from the movie. That was great on Twitter. We appreciated that. So let's get into that. I think that's the next logical step. It's like you announced you're laid off.
Yep.
Obviously like posted on Twitter, just kind of let people know. And I mean, what happened? It was really pretty unbelievable what happened. I mean, like just for a full day or more. I mean, it's still kind of ongoing, but that first like 24, 36 hours was just like, Aaron Francis was the main character on Twitter which is normally a terrible thing.
I was the main good guy character. You were the main good guy.
Like, that's such a rare thing. Like, to be the main good guy character on Twitter. I know. Just unbelievable. So, so how did you feel about that? What cool things did you see in there? But it was quite just an outpouring of love that was really awesome to see.
It was an outpouring of love beyond my wildest expectations. And I felt really cared for. I felt like, oh, this is like this feels awesome. Like I have not only a lot of people on my team, but it feels like a lot of like really sincere, genuine people that want to see me succeed and are like rooting for me, like as an individual person. And I was like, man, this is really cool.
Yeah.
I should get laid off more often. Like, this feels really great. Like, and I think it's a result of, you know, many things. My whole thing is like, I'm going to be very sincere and kind and generous where I can. And it seems like everyone has come back and given me the same thing, which is super, super nice. So I got out of Dune and was just like shocked by the number of responses and retweets and supportive comments and DMs and emails, and was just like, this is going way better than I ever expected, honestly. Because, you know, like I came to, so I was at a property tax company for like 5 years, just kind of like working the local business, kind of dorking around on Twitter. Nobody knew who I was. Mm-hmm. I went to Tuple after that for like 7 or 8 months. Had a great time there, and we both, you know, Ben and I both just kind of realized like, man, this isn't really what Tuple needs, and this isn't really what Aaron needs. So that's okay. And I knew that going in. So I like came out of this property tax company for 5 years, went to Tuple for a second, and then went to Planet Scale. And that's when I kind of started like being more and more public, especially with kind of the work I was doing at Planet Scale. And I don't think like my brain had adapted to, oh, there are a lot of people that are like super on your side now.
Yeah.
But this inciting incident where it's like, hey guys, I kind of need somebody to be on my team. And everybody was like, F that, we got you, man. We're on your team. Like, this is great. It's so wild. I was, you know, showing my wife. I was like, look at all this. Look at all this. And she's like, you don't have a job. I'm like, yeah, but look at all these people.
She's like, but we're broke. Oh, great. Yeah.
How much is each one of those people paying you individually? I was like, nothing, but it's awesome.
Did you start a GoFundMe? Like,
I'm making literally tens of dollars on these impressions, babe.
I do think it's sort of the timing is like super played into it really well, I guess, too, in a sense, right? Like you had these babies, people were in the loop on like you have a second set of twins, which is an interesting story right there. You're having some health stuff, like, you know, there's just a lot going on. People know your story.
It does feel
a little
scripted, like, doesn't it?
And then it's like, yeah, it's very much like a movie script. And then like, like he's having this hard time. But then you gotta go lower then, right? It's like before the rise, it's like, no,
that's
like
right.
Hard. He's grinding, it's hard. But now something's got to happen to go down that next level that you just don't expect, or that's really extra hard. And it's like, boom, here it is. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, how about
into
we lay
the
him
crevasse?
Off?
Like, you have to climb down to climb up.
Exactly. Yeah. The story only works if you go, you got to hit bottom first and then
gotta
rise
hit
up.
Bottom. And listen, folks, we're there. We found it. This is it. This is the bottom. We've bottomed out completely. Man. So here's the story. Let's recap the story a little bit. Found out we were having a second set of twins.
Right.
Terrifying. Freaked. This is all within the past year, right? These twins aren't even 4 months old, to say nothing of being a year old, right?
Yeah.
So we've got 2 year old twins. Don't be confused. We have a first set of twins, right? So we have 2 year old twins. We find out we're having twins. Freak out. Like, what are we going to do? We can't do this again. We got to sell our house. Boom. Immediately sold our house because it's a 2-bedroom and we're about to have a million kids instead of just two. Yep. Sold the house, moved into this rental where we're at right now. So we're renting a house, and I'm thinking, you'll be proud of me. I'm thinking all the while renting, we've got to buy a house because if I get laid off, I there's no way I can buy a house, right? They want they want that sweet, sweet W-2.
And
so I
got
to buy a house. So unbeknownst to many, we bought a house. Like, we're still in the rental
right
now. But we bought a house. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It gets worse. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Ian loves it. Yeah.
Hey, wait okay. a minute here. Hold
this
on.
Is great. So you this bought is great. A house. I'm telling you. We bought a house. Yeah.
Near this is very recently? Like
this is in September.
Okay. And it's yeah. closed now. You own it and you're paying.
We own it. Payments. We own it okay. fully. Interesting, we are remodeling it, so
okay. Oh wow, there's a whole side quest that doesn't have yeah. to do about.
Yeah,
okay.
yeah, yeah, I know. Okay. I know. Okay. So you can imagine we're paying rent in this yeah. house. We have a house we're paying a mortgage on.
Right. There you go.
And we're remodeling.
Are you just making stuff up now? I mean, it feels like maybe you're just making stuff up. No, okay.
No. Okay. This is the grand reveal. Okay. This is the grand reveal. So between this house, the new house, and the apartment studio, we currently have three properties in the empire, two of which we're just renting. So we're just throwing money away
and like, oh yeah.
and remain empty. Okay. So we bought a house.
Okay.
Cause we're like freaking out. We got to buy a house. Need more space. So we're in this rental. Yeah. We got time. We're like, okay, let's take our time, find the house. We found a great house, bought it. We're starting a remodel. The au pair comes. So Jasmine from Germany arrives. So she, you know, lives with us now and we pay for everything that she does. Then we have another set of twins. Right. So then we have two more babies. It's like, why do one when you could do two?
Lots of babies.
It's called batching. So at this point, we're in November. We're at Thanksgiving. We've got two houses, four kids, one job that will come back. That's important. Right. The right. one that job will come back. Element, yeah. Right? Okay. So don't lose that number. And
seems like a single point of failure issue potentially.
Single point of failure. In fact, it has failed. And so then, as a treat, as a bonus, Aaron gets rheumatoid arthritis. Can't do
a little extra, little flavor.
Just a little treat. Can't sit on the floor and get back up off the floor. My fingers don't straighten out, so I've got these fingers that are all wonky. Get a little rheumatoid arthritis, but it's okay. You know, I'm on paternity leave. Like I can practice de-stressing. I can crush this in my mind vice. So I'm like, I'm doing the whole, we're up all night, we're up all day. We've got two newborns. We're barely making it. I'm on paternity leave with this disease that's just crippling my body. And then I'm like, you know what? We're back, baby. Like, kids are starting to sleep through the night. Like, I have some medicine that makes me feel okay, but it still hurts. But I'm like, I'm ready to get back in the game. Boom. Laid off. That's it. Game over. Kids, the kids stay at four. The adults right. in the household stay at three.
Yeah.
The properties under management actually increase from the two houses to an apartment studio. And then unfortunately the jobs go from one to zero. So yeah, it's a whole like this is a storyline. What happens next? I'm excited to see because we can't dig any deeper. This is the bottom. So we'll see what happens.
I love having a front row seat to this whole thing.
It's great, fantastic. Right?
Yeah. So I mean one element here is that I mean, first of all, you just have a great attitude about it, which I think is good. You seemed a little perturbed when you got laid off. It's probably the most perturbed I've sensed you.
Yeah, we didn't talk. It's weird,
it was
right?
Over text. But like, you know, you rarely get perturbed. So you were a little perturbed, I think. But
perturbed is a good word. You know, Ian, there's a verse in the Bible. You know the Bible. You heard of the Bible, right? Best selling book of all time. Great. Yeah. Right in front of or behind Harry Potter series. There's a verse in there about being gentle as doves. I love to be gentle. Love to be gentle. Yeah. The second half of that verse is be shrewd as serpents. And you know what? Just love it. Love to be shrewd.
We're moving
love
into the shrewd
gentle,
as serpents
love
phase.
Love to be shrewd. Yeah, shrewd we're in the shrewd phase. As serpents phase. You may mistake me for a gentle dove, which I am. I'm also a shrewd serpent. So carry on. I was a little perturbed.
Yes. So you were perturbed. Like, I mean, I think as this conversation even shows, you bounce back, you have a great attitude, you're ready to kind of figure out what's next, which I'm excited to talk about. I do think one of the things we have to touch on in the kind of outpouring of love is I've never seen anything like this in terms of the number of just straight up legit job offers you received on Twitter. is insane, which I think, you know, I am assuming that that at least puts you at some ease. That's like,
it listen, does, like, for sure.
You know, right now you can reply to one of literally probably like 30 or 40 tweets that offered you a job and get a job. So that gives you a lot of flexibility. You could take your time maybe a little bit, figure out what you want to do. But yeah, but I don't know. That was just amazing to see and just wild. But these are like people in the position, not just like, hey, I'm some low man on the totem pole and I watch Aaron CEOs. Francis and I'm like, hey, you should come work at XYZ. It's like, no, the CEO, the, you know, lead person on marketing or whatever, like all the like right people are like, hey, come work with us. So like, an amazing spot to be. Kind of a whole, I don't know if I want to get into this just yet, but there's a, we got to come back to that point a little bit about YouTube and you and Planet Scale and how these things all work. There's some interesting stuff there, but
that might be in Ian's corner, but I'm excited to hear what you have to say.
But all right. So you've set the stage very nicely. That's kind of where we're at. So I guess, where do we want to go from here? Should we talk maybe a little bit about the Planet Scale end of things?
What are our options? We could talk about Planet Scale end of things.
We could do that. We could go kind of some of the businessy end of things. We could go just on, we could get into the YouTube and you and how this all works with the outpouring of job offers. I mean, that's sort of an interesting angle. I don't know.
Man, there's a lot of,
there's a lot. We got a lot of stuff on the list still.
Yeah, we do. We got so much stuff on the list. Goodness gracious. Oh, let's talk about, let's talk about the Planet Scale end of things. This might be more of an Ian's corner, but tell me,
Okay, well, I mean, I think, right, like, they obviously let you know and the other people, because it was, you know, so it was more than just you and more than just marketing. It was apparently sales and marketing is kind of what they said. It sounds like from other posts on Reddit and Twitter and other places that it was some engineers and some other people too, which I'm not super surprised about. Just because once you're going to start laying people off, presumably you're going to just look around for everybody you might want to lay off and lay off everybody you can all at once, which is not surprising. But I think so. Part of the outpouring of love was also matched by an outpouring of hate and dislike and anger towards Planet Scale. And, you know, a lot of it to me, so first of all, these things always go bad, right? Like, you've never heard ever of like, oh, those layoffs went great. The company came off smelling like a rose. Like, it always is going to go poorly for the company at some level, right? Like, that's just what you're signing up for when you decide you're going to do these layoffs. You know that that's what's going to happen. So there's always going to be like a baseline amount of that. But it does seem like it was more than the baseline amount, I would say. And to me, a lot of it was just how I feel like they handled it very poorly, which a lot of people have pointed out. And I know it's be a little tricky for you to talk about, but I mean, they have like this announcement post. And to me, like, a lot of people are caught up in the like, that they laid people off at all, which to me, I'm not as bothered by that. I can understand like on a personal level, like obviously I feel bad for the people. I obviously know you, but I can understand from a business perspective. It's like, listen, like we have to do something for whatever reason. We're not making enough money. We're whatever, right? And so we have to make an adjustment. Sometimes that happens. Okay, I can I can deal with that. But to me,
for I guess the record, I can too.
Understand on the like a certain level,
I can,
right?
That I can mentally assent to the fact that, you know what, sometimes the revenue and the expenses don't match up quite like you want, and we got to make the expenses go down.
And this is a startup. I feel like the people who took jobs here understood the level of risk they were taking on some level, right? And so they know they're not going to work at Google. Right. Where it's like, but you can also get laid off from. Right. So, but your likelihood is higher. And
people have. Yes.
People have recently. So nowhere is totally safe. But, you know, obviously, generally speaking, if you go somewhere big and established, it's probably a little less likely than if you go to a startup where it's more likely the thing doesn't even work and it goes to zero and everybody's fired. Right. So, you know, everybody signed up for that. So I feel like that's okay. But to me, what I really thought is the whole thing seemed like incredibly rushed. That's the overall impression I have is that it was rushed. And in the rushing, they made some big errors. And like that post is like the biggest error. So like, people are like, they should have a PR firm and all stuff. I don't even think they need a PR firm. I think they needed to take their time a little bit and step back and be like, is this post conveying what we want to convey? And I can't imagine that it does. I mean, it's titled Planet Scale Forever, which is like a very bizarre, just the title is bizarre. Like, I just fired all these people, Planet Scale Forever. Like, that seems like not forever. That seems like you just fired half your staff. That's the opposite of forever. Like, so right there, it's very bizarre. And it just gets more bizarre as it gets into it. Like, they basically doesn't mention that they laid people off. There's no empathy or anything like that there. Because they're trying to, I guess, I mean, it seems mostly a post for customers. I feel like it probably should be two posts. Obviously, like, thanking the people who got them this far. And, like, you could go that whole thing. I think there's a way to do that and be sincere about it, I would think. And then even the business post of it, that business side of it was somewhat bizarre and just like how it lays everything out. I think that really what kicked it off is like the combination of like you're letting go people who are beloved in the community, which is always going to be hard. And then this post that is just bad on a couple levels there. And again, to me, it just felt like really rushed. It's like, okay, like, and I can even understand that as a business owner. Like, if I was laying a bunch of people off, like, I would just be like, I want to get through this. I just want to rip the Band-Aid off and move on. But if you just don't take that little bit of extra time there, I feel like you rush it and then it spirals out of your control, something like this, very quickly. And it's definitely spiraled out of their control very, very quickly. So I don't know if you have anything on the announcement post.
Wow, Ian, that's an interesting analysis.
So I will, we'll move on from that. you know, I think kind of related to that, I don't know. You know, it's like, I don't myself even want to go too far down into negativity. But I guess to me, it's like the learning opportunity potential of it all for like the listeners. It's like, I think it's informative to think about these things. And like, you never know if you're going to be in that spot. And it's like the other kind of main takeaway for me personally as a business owner is like, if you're going to be the one doing this, like, you just got to stay off Twitter. Like, you just got to stay off Twitter. Like, you can't be the CEO out there tweeting during the layoffs. You just can't be, because there's literally nothing you can say is going to do any good, and it's only going to do bad. And the CEO of Planet Scale has had some crazy tweets that are very also bizarre and just like feed into this whole like, are things spiraling in a negative way out of control? I don't know. Like, again, like, he had a tweet about that the average customer of Planet Scale is $270,000 in revenue, I guess, a year. Seems very unlikely to me that that would be the case. I can't imagine, like, the amount of, it's just not big enough organization. This is the whole thing. It doesn't make any sense. So a lot of weird stuff going on out there. I think that's all I really have to say about that. Let's move on to some other stuff. I think the businessy angle of it. The other kind of big thing is they eliminated the freemium tier as part of this, which I think is pretty interesting. I don't know. Just generally, what are your thoughts on the freemium tier? Like, obviously, you can't give us any details about like how well it did. Obviously, it wasn't doing that well financially. They didn't think it was positive, they would still have it, right? So, but I don't know. What did you think about it? Like, was that something you heard a lot about, or that you relied
fortunately,
on?
Fortunately, I've been on paternity for 3 months, and so I truly don't have any inside information because I was logged off. So yeah, anything I say is going to be my own opinion. I honestly don't have a problem with like rolling back the free tier. Like, stuff costs money. And I know from, you know, many, many public statements and the marketing page, like, there's a lot that goes on behind a Planet Scale database. Like, it's not just a MySQL instance running on an EC2 box, right? It's a, you know, it's MySQL, it's Vitess, it's a couple of replicas, it's the entire, like, it's the whole shebang. And so giving that away for $0 is like, oh man, how do we make this work? And so should the free tier have ever existed? I don't know. Moot at this point. Interesting, like, philosophical question, but moot at this point. Should it exist now? Apparently not. And like, I honestly don't have a super problem with that at all. I think, you know, if there's anything to modify, you know, at the margins, maybe it's communication, but I just don't, like getting rid of the free tier makes a lot of sense to me. Getting rid of me, however, what in the world? Yeah. I got a little more vested interest there, but the free tier, I'm like, eh, cool.
I want to get to that. Okay. I want to get to that in a second. But yeah, on the free tier, I think, again, like just pulling out learnings from this whole situation, I think when you have a free tier that's not zero marginal cost, so where every new customer costs you some and probably substantial amount of money in a case like this, even if it's, it might be $5, right? But $5 times a lot of free users is a lot of money. Whereas like in a more pure software environment, all you're costing yourself is rows in a database, and rows in a database are incredibly cheap. But here, to provide somebody with a free service that also is like a good free service that like, yes, it's fast and is reliable and all those things, is going to cost money. So yeah, should it ever have existed? Is it a good idea? Maybe not. I mean, this is sort of interesting. One of the things we talked about early on in the podcast that the CEO of PlanetScale chimed in on was how I thought that the pricing page was bad and that the pricing was too low. And it was odd because like the whole point of this service to me is that like if you aren't going to use the thing that comes with your hosting provider, if you're not going to use AWS RDS, if you're not going to use Google's MySQL thing, like there has to be like a compelling reason that presumably means so either free is a compelling reason, right? But then that's hard to make a business around. Or the other direction is it's premium. Like we're giving you something you can't get at RDS. We're giving you more reliability, more speed. We're giving you the cool emails that tell you you're missing an index or whatever. Like these are the premium features you're getting that you don't get from RDS, which is why you should go through the pain in the butt of not just using RDS and use PlanetScale instead. And all that to me then implies that you should be charging more money. It should be a higher price. It should be not focused on people who want to spend $29 a month because that's kind of the low end of the market there. So,
what I'm realizing now is that you got me laid off.
Well, Ian
planted a bug. You planted a bug.
Let me tell you,
and it exploded in my face.
First of all, I don't think that's totally. That might not be totally incorrect. First of all, in that way, pointing out that this is like an enterprise product and not a product that's a premium product. I hope I'm not the one who actually pointed out to them. They didn't realize it before then, but maybe it did. But then the other thing that got me feeling very bad. So when you first sent me a message that you got laid off, like I didn't know the rest of it. So I thought just you got laid off. And I was like, we're always talking on the podcast about like all these ways Aaron can make some more money. Like probably not optimal for his career, like in-house there. It's probably not the thing your boss wants to hear all the time. But they fired everybody in marketing, basically, it sounds like, or the majority of the people. So it wasn't just you. So I was like, all right, it wasn't totally my fault.
Now I'm thinking that it's no less than 40%
right.
Your fault.
It's something in that realm. Yeah,
for sure.
Okay, so where were we going to go? We had a sidetrack and now I lost it.
Let's see. What were you just doing? You were just doing free tier, marginal cost, premium.
Well, let's talk about maybe...
one thing I wanted to say, you were talking about the index emails. Like you know, PlanetScale will email you when you miss an index. So I was gone when they shipped that, and I'm super bummed because I think that is super awesome. The schema recommendations thing is like, this is really cool.
And that's a real differentiator. It's like one of those things that you're not going to always use, but at the same time, it is very cool and something that nobody has that I'm aware
of. Cool. Very sticky, I think, because it will continue to email you as you continue to do migrations and dork up your database. Watching. It's going to be like, hey, you effed that one up. that is a super cool feature and one that would make great videos. Like you can go through each of the like, hey, here's why we're recommending this because, you know, look, you have a duplicate index. What's a duplicate index? Let me give you a video, make some jokes and be folksy. And so... pity. Great feature, but
I mean, well, this is sort of interesting. Like this is some of the other stuff I thought would be cool to talk about. Like, I guess kind of to cover this, the PlanetScale end of it specifically, I think it's sort of interesting to think about what their business model actually is. Cause when you fire the marketers and you fire the salespeople, and you get rid of the free tier, that's kind of a lot of the ways people normally get business. And so like, obviously they're out there saying like, this way we have infinite runway, which is a weird thing to say. And they, you know, presumably they're implying that now they're going to be profitable, but like in most subscription businesses, you have to continue to replace the customers who churn out. And like without any of those functions, that seems difficult. So I guess my assumption is that they're going to rebuild parts of those functions, is my guess, as like, I would think with like enterprise salespeople, like we're going to go hard into enterprise. And so we don't view some of these other functions and probably the existing salespeople as the right fit for that strategy change. But they haven't said, but that would be my assumption. I don't know. I don't know if you have any thoughts in general about the idea of like, obviously it's tricky for you to talk about to some degree, yeah, but tricky. Just in general, this kind of what their business might be like going forward or what they were thinking.
I'm not sure, and I'll have to tread lightly. Yeah. I will say, I think it makes, if you're eliminating the free tier, which they've done, I think it makes sense to eliminate me. Just me singularly. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you do for enterprise accounts without sales. And that's not my world, and so it's not really even useful for me to opine on. I think the only thing I can say is like, if you don't have a free tier, you don't really want YouTube videos blowing up and bringing a bunch of indie hackers to your free tier. that sucks, but it kind of makes perfect sense to me. The rest of it, I can't really say too much on.
I think, so that was kind of the other thing I wanted to talk about, because I think it's really interesting when you talk about content marketing, and we can definitely, I think, talk about this, and this is not Planet Scale specific, because there's kind of two types of content marketing. There's like very keyword focused and really, even if it's like a video, like really focused in on like a customer's pain point or problems, something they're focusing on the customers who are ready to buy. So like, this is why Google is super rich, right? Is that it's like you type in what's some good help desk software, and they're going to give you a bunch of help desk software. And you are just that question that you ask that question means you are looking to buy help desk software. And so that's incredibly valuable. But then you have a different tier of content marketing, right? Which is like the softer kind of element of like, well, how do I answer a customer service request nicely? Like that's not necessarily somebody who's looking to buy help desk software.
It's like awareness marketing.
Right. And so like that was a lot of the stuff obviously on YouTube that you guys were doing was like improving your MySQL indexes. Well, that's an interesting video. That's not necessarily people who want to buy or looking to move platforms or buy these kind of services that Planet Scale offers.
It's not CTOs looking to find a new database and they're searching on MySQL indexes. It's
95% not those people and 5%
98%.
Maybe, 98% not those people, right? So so then it becomes the long game of that, which is like over time, like you're building up a cheap tier or a free tier and they move up, or just you get to a scale where it's just so many people that it doesn't matter if it's only 2% are relevant and actually purchase, because 2% is a lot of if you have 500,000 YouTube followers or a million or whatever, right?
And if we can bring up Cloudflare, do you know anything about Cloudflare?
I've heard of them. Maybe you can tell me a bit about them.
Ian's an investor in Cloudflare.
Hello, Cloudflare.
Through the public markets.
Unfortunately, through the public markets.
Ridiculous. Just like a plebe, like the rest of us.
Yeah, why did they let me in early?
Cloudflare has a great free tier to paid progression. And so the more free people they get, which at this point is 30-40% of the world, the more that people are going to be like, all right, you know, this site is now a business site and I'm going to pay $20 a month or whatever it is. They've got a great free to paid conversion, apparently, because their free tier is very generous. And
well, and there's also
continue to do well.
A couple ways to think about free tier, and I think people get, there's a couple angles to a free tier, right? There's the direct, like people sign up for free and then they grow and you grow with them. And that is part of it. But I think the real value, this doesn't necessarily apply to Cloudflare, which is very interesting. Cloudflare is very similar to Planet Scale, but in a different type of company, like a more just pure software B2B type company, the free tier, the best free tiers are just pure advertising. Like the trade-off you're making with the consumer is you could use this for free, but what you're going to give me is advertising. So like think of like a newsletter service like ConvertKit. And ConvertKit gives you the little widget that you can embed in your page to like have people sign up. And if you're on the free tier, the widget says powered by ConvertKit or whatever it says, right? So
which
now
creates a loop.
Right. So this is the loop. Now you're not even necessarily worried about the free people. Like you want more free people because the more free people is more advertising and exposes you to more people. And some percentage of those people are going to be people who are looking for a newsletter themselves and so on and so forth. So then the growing the free into paid is one avenue of making the free tier valuable, but also the free tier is in and of itself potentially valuable as advertising that you didn't pay essentially anything for, as long as you are running a zero marginal cost business where it's not actually costing you money to host the free people or not a significant amount of money. Whereas, so that's not true of PlanScale because it's costing them a significant amount of money for the free tier. And to some degree, the same is true of Cloudflare because you're not really exposing people. It's again, like you're generating word of mouth, but it still takes somebody to like tell you as opposed to just people being able to see it organically. But Cloudflare has done it very effectively. And I think they've also been really smart about one of the reasons I loved Cloudflare from the beginning was they actually went out and made all these deals with the network, with like the service providers in the data centers and stuff, the backbones directly. And so they have basically all this unlimited bandwidth, which is why they could do things like no egress costs where AWS charges you egress. And like, we can provide all these network services because we have basically unlimited network bandwidth. And so the marginal cost is close to zero and we can absorb a bunch of free people and still
and
make that work.
Slightly different, but somewhat the same. Cloudflare gets better the more customer, the more sites they have on Cloudflare. And so to them, there is a little bit of a benefit of the free tier just having people on it because the more traffic that flows through their network, the better they are.
Yeah. And I know the CEO, if you listen to the investors calls, which I do most of the time, they,
you're
they
so
like the,
in, you're
like
so
the free
in
tier too. Cause they, you know, they can roll things out to the free tier cause they're very like developer oriented and want people to build on top. And they're also basically building out their own cloud essentially of like, a little bit edge cloud as opposed to like a traditional cloud. And so they want to have a lot of developers and stuff. So they can utilize the free tier also as a way to like just have people using these APIs and things like that, getting feedback and having those kind of loops in place before necessarily these big companies that are going to spend $10, $20 million with them.
I think they called out the free tier in their S1 and how important.
They've been all in on the free tier from the beginning. So they've optimized a lot of their business around being able to support a free tier as opposed to it being like, it's not like just a marketing thing that's like, well, we should have a free tier and we'll have people sign up and then move up. It's like more ingrained. So
that's interesting. So put a bow on it. What's the good free tier and what's a bad free tier?
So to me, the optimal free tier, I think there's other ways to make it work, but the optimal free tier has some type of advertising element where you're exposing just people. You're being exposed to your customers' customers. Like that is ideal.
Love it.
And then of course the free people, some of them will convert up and become paid and that's great. But you're deriving value from them regardless of if they ever move up or not. That if some percentage of them ever send you additional business, you know, by people clicking those powered by links, then you're going to be able to make that a plus situation. And bad free tier, it's like a business that can't derive those benefits, it's going to be much harder because it's just harder to make that flywheel work. You're just giving away more and more resources and money and you know, word's going to get out that you can get this thing for free, which is great, but then if you can't make money off those free people, then that's bad. Like, so that's
bad tier, high marginal cost, no viral loop.
Yeah, without the viral loop it's tricky.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
I like that. Good take.
All right, so what are your thoughts about the content stuff though, like in terms of the sort of like broad content marketing and the stuff you've kind of traditionally been doing at PlanScale for the most part, I would say, versus more focused, the different types of company that are looking for those different things. Like, I guess, where is your mind at with that stuff? You've obviously thought about this a little bit and like, well, what I was doing maybe isn't that valuable without a free tier. So how do you feel about that?
Just like broadly across the industry.
Yeah, sure.
Broadly. I think I have good evidence that I did an amazing job at PlanetScale.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I've got tweets from lots of very smart people. I've got, you know, performance reviews and stuff like that. I think I did a very good job.
Yep.
I think we have decided here, and maybe this is what precipitated my being let go. It didn't make sense for the business, which is fine. Like, that doesn't, you know, that's not a strike against me, which is something I've had to remind myself of, that like, I executed faithfully on my duty, and it turns out my duty was not needed. It's like, eh, that sucks, but I'm proud of myself for doing a good job. Tell me.
I want to do a little Ian's Corner here just for a second.
All right. Tell me an Ian's Corner.
A little Ian's Corner is that, I guess it would make me a little bit worried on the Planescale front, because you were clearly doing an excellent job. If we just go by the raw numbers, just public numbers of like last summer, they had 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, and now they have 40 or whatever. I don't know what the current number is, but it's some 40, 50 X times what they had last summer. Right. And so to me, it's like, okay, well, that's even in the world where like you're going more enterprise. Like if you get this channel up to 500,000, a million, which is the trajectory it's on, that's going to be valuable because you only need to close one or two or three or 10 customers a year from it. And it's going to be valuable enough, right? If you're at that kind of scale. So it's like, okay, so they did the math and we're like, well, we can't afford to let it go that long, essentially is what they're saying, right? Like we can't keep paying Aaron. Because there's even other places they could have cut. Like I know they let go the video editor, Steve, who seems like a great guy who you work with.
Love
but
Steve.
I could see that. Like, it's like, okay, it's a little tight. We can't have a full-time video editor. So we're going to outsource that, but we're still going to have Aaron do the videos and maybe we're going to cut in some other places or whatever. But once you're like, no, we can't ride it out for the year or 2 years it's going to take to get to that 500,000 subscribers to then definitely make it a plus EB situation, as you'd say.
As you would say.
See, you know nobody, it's a poker term, though.
I know it's a poker thing. No one in the world is going to say a plus EV thing. Plus EV. So you're not a man of the people when you say plus EV.
Positive revenue, profit generating.
Don't say that like we're all degens. It's a plus EV.
I gotta
the
throw out some,
odds are good at that
I gotta
point.
Throw out some stuff for the people out there, for my people who are just like, they're out there, the poker players.
Yeah, all four anyway, of the poker players that listen to us.
So I guess I'd be a little concerned on that front that it's like, it feels like, hey, it's so hard. I mean, in 20 years in business, I've never had anything work as well as that was working for PlanetScale, right? Like marketing wise. So you have something that's just clearly super working. And to say, listen, we can't afford to let it ride out for the year or two that to become a full-on juggernaut at any level. Like, forget the free. It doesn't matter. Like, they still have a base tier that's $39. It's not like the base tier is now $80,000 and, like, it's just pure, pure enterprise. It's like, no, you're going to get some $50 signups along the way, right? And then you could have even tweaked it a little bit. Like, maybe you do more videos that are, like, let me tell you how awesome PlanetScale is specifically. And like, right. So there's other things that could have been done and you could have mixed that up a little bit besides just the more general type videos. So there's a lot that could have been done there. And to say like, listen, we can't keep paying Aaron to do that because there's not enough money would be the logical outcome you would think there of what you're thinking. So anyway, that's kind of like a little like, ooh, I don't know. That's like, a little tricky that you have this thing that's really on fire working and you don't think that's worth keeping is a little bizarre to me, a little concerning. But anyway, continue on.
That's an interesting thought, Ian.
Yes, exactly. That's why it was at Ian's corner.
That is Ian's corner. I love Ian's corner. Yeah. We gotta make that a regular
that's a segment. Thing.
Things Ian talks about where I respond with, that's an interesting thought, Ian.
keep that going.
Yeah, I love that. It's a good bit. We love a bit. So broadly across the industry, I think, well, I will say one is I have been very, very like encouraged to be, of course, recognized by all of our friends and, you know, people that are online, super online. Like that has been a super encouragement. Another thing specifically that has been a super encouragement is two giant YouTubers have called me out by name. So Theo, the JavaScript, primarily JavaScript guy, T3, and then the Primogen, who's coming to Laracon, which if you haven't gotten your Laracon tickets and you want to see an unemployed Aaron Francis on stage alongside the Primogen and Adam Wathen and Taylor Atwell.
Not unemployed then.
Yeah, that's a long way away.
The Primogen also did a very nice breakdown of the situation. So if you want a nice little breakdown there, we can link that in the show notes. He did a nice job.
I was pleased, surprised and pleased to hear Theo and Prime both say specifically, Aaron Francis did a great job over there. And Theo, I think Theo said, like, PlanetScale is one of the only companies to have figured out B2B YouTube.
Right.
And so I think, you know, I definitely learned a lot while I was at PlanetScale. And I think one of the things that I noticed is a lot of companies try to do B2B YouTube and it's just like, it's just lame. Like nobody watches it and it just is boring and it sucks. And so I think across like the entire industry, I think it can work. I think I've proven it can work, but it has to be done a little bit differently than I think, you know, taking a webinar and slapping it on YouTube. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that this says much about the industry, you know, as a whole, because I don't know exactly, I don't know anything about, you know, PlanetScale's economics or like what their next plans are. So I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush, but I think if you have, maybe if you have a free tier that works super well and is viable, then being on YouTube, I think specifically being on YouTube, if you can crack it, it is like the ultimate hack, because YouTube's distribution is unbelievably large. And even like, I was even surprised that people on YouTube like stumbled across it, and like, it's not my audience. It's YouTube bringing people in.
Yeah,
and that was the thing that was surprising to me. I thought, okay, I could drive, you know, some of my friends over to YouTube and we could get views, but that's not what happened. It was like an entirely separate and discrete audience altogether that YouTube delivered to us. And so I think it can totally still work. I really do.
Yeah. Especially, yeah, like you said, the way the algorithm there works is like, if you hit the marks, like it can just drive an insane amount of subscribers and views.
I think one of my PlanetScale videos has like 375,000 views.
Right, which is crazy for this.
Which is crazy. Yeah. And like two or three of them have 100,000. It's like,
this is an interesting thing to talk about too. I think the idea that in this situation, and I think you'll be able to talk about this because it's not really about PlanetScale at all. It's about when you have somebody become the face of the organization.
Interesting.
It's a weird spot for the business, right? Because like Aaron Francis is the face of PlanetScale, but Aaron Francis was the face of PlanetScale. It's like, this is all where it gets weird, right? It's like,
it does get weird.
It gives, you know, that person has an outsized amount of influence potentially. Mm-hmm. If something happens to them, forget like they go, they could obviously get another job, but just anything happens to them, right? Like they're gone now, like your marketing is highly dependent on this one person who is really good at what they do. So it's just a very complicated situation. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that in general.
I do have a few thoughts in general. And I think I knew that all along, that like I was the face of PlanetScale. And I think the public response has proven that out. Like, There are like six people that tweeted at me and they're like, I thought you were the owner of PlanetScale.
Yep, exactly.
I was like, no, unfortunately, I was just another pawn.
I fired myself.
But yeah, so I don't know. I think it's interesting. You know, to some extent, it is a little bit risky. In this case, you know, the risk wasn't that I would leave because I was very happy there. The risk was that they decided, you know, from a business perspective, it doesn't make sense, and they let me go. And so, like, you know, do I feel super bad? No, because I like, again, feel like I did my duty and was faithful to execute on my role. But it is kind of, you know, it is kind of a risk to like give someone those reins, I guess. Unless you know they're super going to stay or you're super going to keep them. Like,
right. Well, yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, I mean, I guess I wonder how much of letting you go is just, there is this risk out there that like, we're going to have to really pay this guy a lot of money one way or the other at some point, to keep him. Cause it's just going to be obvious that like, if he's bringing in all the people, then like, he's going to need an outsized.
At some point, he's going to wise up and he's going to ask for a lot of money.
He's going to ask
he's
for a lot of money.
He's going to become shrewd instead of gentle, and he'll ask for more money.
So that's, I mean, obviously, you don't know the answer to that, but I mean, that's something I thought about. I think the other thing is, I mean, I saw this a long time ago with one of our competitors called Help Scout, and they had been really killing the content marketing back in the beginning. And as far as I'm aware, they took the guy who was doing all that, and this was all written. And I'm pretty sure they like made him a part owner. Like he wasn't originally an owner, and they like gave him like more than just options. Like they gave him like a piece and like wrote it out. And it's like,
you should tell me that 6 months ago,
that's
man.
Kind of the thing you have to do.
Where are you now?
Should have let you in on that. Well, apparently, it might not have gone that well for you. I don't know.
Well, I think if I was a part owner, I wouldn't mind. Yeah.
Well, no, I know, but I mean, like maybe they would have wised up then and been like, "Hey, this guy wants money. Right. Get rid of this guy." Right. I don't know, but yeah, it is an interesting dynamic.
You brought this up. You brought this up several episodes ago, and I think I turned it into a impromptu Ian's Corner. And right. So that's interesting.
Well, I guess we'll see. Yeah. We're seeing one way that it can play out. It's pretty much. I don't think it could ever go down the middle. I think it's kind of like it's gonna. If you have it successfully working, it's either gonna go towards. We're going to lavish this person and they're going to be like our spokesman, or that's not going to work because like we're too dependent on them and we don't want that dependency. But I think it would be hard to be in the middle.
I feel like in some regards, Scott Hanselman is this way at Microsoft. I know Microsoft doesn't need him, but it does feel like he's a little bit of a public face to a certain community. Yeah. And then I feel like who was Kelsey Hightower working for? Forever. Do you know?
No.
Or is he independent?
I haven't followed him that much, but I've seen him on Twitter. But see, I think like Microsoft is different, right? Because ultimately they're so huge, they don't care. They're gonna be like they might be able to be like, he might be able to get a little more money or whatever. He's doing a good job and that's all fine. But they're just so huge that like at the end of the day, they can afford to go out and find more amazing talent if they need to, and they can do it.
And they can also afford to pay him $5 million.
They could do it that way too, right? Like they have a lot of options. Whereas like a startup is harder for them to pull that off, right? Or even just to replace you. If you walk away and you start your own consulting thing, like we talked about last week on the show, left and did that, they wouldn't be able to replace you, even for more money. Like it would be hard. Their reach is not as big as like a Microsoft and things like that. So, and just sheer dollars would be hard too. So, all right. So, what else we got here? Let's switch to the future.
I love the future.
Let's get
better. Got to be better than the past, right? It's gotta be better. That's the best thing about the future.
So what are you thinking about? Obviously, there's 50 job offers on the table. Some very impressive companies, including Cloudflare was one of them. A lot of other big name companies. I mean, there's just people publicly posting. So So you have those opportunities. You have obviously going your own way, like we already talked about last week. Mm-hmm. I think this kind of opens up maybe some other possibilities. Like, could you have a job that's not full time and give yourself more time to do some of your own stuff? So there's a lot of potential. So what are you thinking about?
Well, let's turn the tables before I poison the well on what I'm thinking about. What are you thinking about? If you were me.
Yeah.
Or, in fact, if you were Ian, which you are.
I am Ian.
What do you think is the obvious move for Aaron Francis in this situation?
Okay. Well,
what's right in front of my face?
I'm going to have to ask you a question, and I don't know if you can answer it, but I can't answer it without the question, which is it depends a lot on your financial situation. Like, if you are like, hey, it's pretty tight, then my answer is going to be probably different than if, hey, we have a good amount of saved and I could take some risks. I can answer both ways, I guess. Maybe rather than you don't necessarily have to answer.
I can answer a financial position question. The Francis family, completely discreet from Planet Scale Incorporated. The Francis family has plenty of runway. We're fine. We can take some time.
Okay. So then I think in that scenario, what I would probably do is I would be leaning more towards some type of trying your own thing, I think.
Okay.
Because it seems like this is a good opportunity for it. Like, if you could start up with, you've already been thinking a lot this direction. Mm-hmm. If you get in another job, like, that's going to, you're still going to be having these thoughts, but you're going to be trying to do a good job at the other job. And, mm-hmm. you know, I could see that being non-optimal in some ways, potentially. So I'd probably lean towards that. I do think, because also if you have the runway, these jobs are going to be there. So mm-hmm. if not every single one of them, right? But you will be able to sure. get another job. I think the ship has sailed on, like, you are not employable. Like, you are going to be employable, so. Mm-hmm. and it'll be fine. So if you take a year and try something risky and it doesn't work, then you'll be okay. You can just go get a job and it'll be fine. My asterisk to all that
okay.
would be, I would still take some calls with the most promising mm-hmm. of the job offers and see what they're talking about. Because maybe they're just talking about an amount of money that's so much that it's more than you're realistically going to do yourself, especially if right. you're more on this, like, consulting angle and not, like, building a software product or something like that. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, like, if you're a consultant, there's generally a ceiling. Like, a few people can break through the ceiling and get into the, right. you know, many millions or tens of millions, but that's pretty rare. Most of the time, it's like, you know, there's going to be some kind of upper limit, a million and a half, whatever, because ultimately it's your time and you only have mm-hmm. so much time. So, mm-hmm. So I would probably take a few of those calls and see what people are thinking. And if there's something just really incredibly interesting and incredibly, you know, lucrative that it might make sense to go that way, then that would be motivating, of course, in its own way. Yeah, that's probably what I would be thinking if I was in your shoes.
Nailed it.
Hey!
Got it. 10 for 10, baby.
Woo-hoo!
So I have right now 20 interviews booked.
Oh, wow.
Maybe,
all right.
Maybe more.
That's a great negotiating position.
The rest of my day, this is my nightmare, but my calendar is just totally striped with
wow.
with calls.
Yeah.
So here's kind of how I'm thinking about it. I want to take all these calls because if there's a job that, you know, I get on the phone and it seems really compelling and they want to give me a good amount of money, that's awesome.
Like, right.
yeah, love that. Love that for me. Thank you yep. very much. So I want to take all these calls and, like, see what's out there, because this is the first time I have ever publicly hunted for a job.
Yeah.
And I just don't know. Like, I don't know what's out there. I don't know the state of the market. It's never really been on my mind. You know, when I was at Planet Scale, I was very happy and didn't look around. It's like, I don't know what's out there. And have never, ever tweeted and been like, hey, everyone, I'm looking for a job.
Right.
It's like, that has never come up before. So I'm very interested to talk to all these people, regardless of if I end up taking, you know, I can only take one job and I may take zero jobs, but it's still good to, like, talk to these people and, you know, they have done me a favor by, like, reaching out. And so I would like to talk to them and see what's going on and see if I can help.
There's also,
go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, there is also, like, it's often, especially on Twitter, like, idealized the, like, indie, whatever, mm-hmm. or bootstrapper and being your own boss and all that stuff, which it is, does have amazing benefits in areas, but there is something really awesome that I do miss a lot of, the, like, you work in a bigger company trying to do something that a small company can just never accomplish. It's just not yes, totally. Possible. Like, you're part of mm-hmm. a larger initiative, making something big happen in the world that just yep. can't happen in a 10-person company. It's just not what it's yes. set up to do. And so I do think that, or as a consultant or whatever, like, right. this is, like, it's a bigger type of change. And so that is compelling in if you're into that kind of thing, and it's something worth thinking about too, I think.
And that was one of the fun things about Planet Scale, is, like, I got to watch all these uber geniuses build stuff, and it's like, right, man, exactly, their stuff we're building is very good, and I was yep, like proud yep. of that. So yeah, there's absolutely an aspect of that.
Yep.
So I'm going to take all these calls and I'm going to take them in good faith. If there's a good enough job, I'll take it. These aren't just yep. like, oh, I should just talk to people. So I'm going to see what the world has to offer. And then I agree that this is a low risk time. I think if I were going to try something, this would be the time. Mm-hmm. Because I think I could publicly come out and say, like, hey, I'm going to try to do my own thing. And then 6 months later, come out and say, hey, my own thing failed. I would love to get a job. And some percentage of people are going to be like, great, you can still, let's re-interview. Let's do it again. Yep. And I don't think I've lost too much. I think it does seem really exciting to me to like go out and try to do my own thing. So I don't know. I'm still actively thinking about that pretty hard. The downsides do seem pretty small to trying my own thing right now.
I have a devil's advocate position here.
Okay, so you're both angels and demon because you started out by telling me I should do it.
Sure. Now I'm going to tell you why you shouldn't do it.
Okay, tell me.
I guess the thing that definitely the biggest negative to me. So it sounds like financially it's not like super tight. Obviously I think you're right. We agree that like these jobs will be here in 6 months or a year. If you need to go get a job, if it doesn't work out to do your own thing, I think that's fine. But I do think in terms of your actual life, where it is right at this second, I don't love it for starting a big new thing. I just think like you have two tiny babies, babies.
Is it the arthritis? Is it the two houses? Is it the apartment? Which one is it, Ian?
When you're under that kind of stress and time.
Or the type 1 diabetes, lest we forget. Don't forget about that one. That's the OG right there.
Yeah, right. So that's the one I'm least worried about because whatever, you've been dealing with that one.
I do have that one under control.
Right. Yeah. You know what's up with that. So, okay, like we could, that's like in your daily routine at this point to kind of manage, but these other things are not. And I, you know, I did it having babies and it was super hard. And that was just like with one and then the second and then later the third when things were more established. But
sounds easy.
Yeah, it's way easier than twins and more twins and everybody's under three. So I do think that's the part that gives me a little, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but is worth some heavy consideration because like there's just going to be the grind and the hard parts and the like, there's no vacation time and the pressure on yourself. If you're not working, the money's not coming in and all that stuff is there and just a lot of added stress over just, hey, I clock in and I have a team that supports me and they're doing stuff for me and whatever, I show up and I bang out some videos and like, I can take a week off if I need it and I'm still going to get paid and all that stuff. Yeah. You have healthcare, like all that stuff. You don't have to figure out healthcare. You don't have to figure out retirement. You don't have to figure out all this stuff you have to do. You don't have to, you know, set up a company and do all these things. And like, so there is like so much overhead and stress there that just at this phase of your life feels a little tricky, but at the same time, you know, it is also presenting itself as a good time to do it. So it is both sides there. I don't know if it's like, might be something to think about. Is it something where you could have a partner or initially an employee that is, like pretty early on or something like that?
The partner thing is very much on the table.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So something like that where it's not just you taking it all on.
So I'm actively talking to somebody about going out solo together, which would be duo in that case, going out duo.
A solo duo.
So that's very much on the table.
Yeah, I think that would probably be a good idea.
My counter to your counter is turns out the money was absolutely necessary. I loved working at Planet Scale, but it turns out the money was, you know, getting paid is a big part of it. So that's kind of an important detail. Where does the money come from? So yeah, going out and doing the work on my own would be fun. But you gotta get paid. I got seven mouths to feed here. So my counter to the counter is, I've been basically trying to do all of the stuff we're talking about on nights and weekends.
Right.
And there's a part of me that thinks like, oh, thank God I'm free now.
Like, that is always, I feel like any listener in the show has gotten that impression. That like, well, Aaron's trying to run a complete business on the side. He's got 42 side projects. And
And so like trying to like faithfully execute my duties at Planet Scale, which I think the record will show that I have, and run everything else is like, that's stressful.
Right.
So now we're trading a little bit of like, I have 9 to 5 free now.
Right. Yeah.
And so I'm not trying to squeeze it in. The corollary is I don't have the money. And like you said, the money turns out is a crucial part.
Important.
So where does the stress meter go now that I have eliminated the 9-to-5 requirement and I can just focus all of that energy on, you know, Aaron Francis Incorporated?
Yeah.
I don't know which one moves the stress needle up higher or down lower. So,
which will be an interesting experiment if you do not get a job right away. And it's like, you could try it. And if it turns out, hey, it's way too freaking stressful, like whatever, you go get a job and that's fine.
Yes.
And I was like, this is a little bit of opportunity to kickstart the Aaron Francis Inc. world, because you're having all these conversations. Some percentage of these people, hey, you can rent Aaron Francis. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
So if you can get a couple of clients out the gate, to consult with or whatever you're thinking about doing, that might be interesting opportunity here.
Yeah, I think so. And I think this is also, if I do go down this route, this is also like I have the attention right now.
Yeah.
Right. So I have the cultural conversation headed my direction, which is good. And so now if I can take all these interviews this week and then decide next week, I think I can still capitalize on this wave of like social media attention. And I think that's pretty important.
So what are you thinking? I don't know how much you want to tell us, but what are you thinking about if you do go out on your own? Like what are you thinking there?
So if I do, which is still an open question, I think screencasting.com becomes an empire finally. Mm-hmm. So I'm already talking with several people to do extra courses for it. So that would be like deep dives into ScreenFlow, Adobe Premiere, Camtasia, like have 6 different courses on these editors, right? Yep. And so like you take the flagship course from me that tells you how to do screencasting, philosophy, ethos, like tips and tricks to make it go faster. And then you pick your favorite editor and you get either a course from me if it's ScreenFlow or Steve the editor if it's Adobe Premiere. These different instructors that are like, great, you watch the flagship course. Here's how we execute that in the software that you have chosen.
I like that.
So we do that. That becomes, you know, we do add a forum, add a bunch of other stuff to make it more of a destination instead of just a course. And then try to make that evergreen and experiment a little bit with paid ads to see if we can make those numbers work. Because this is, again, is such a broad, it's such a broad topic that I think, you know, I got to get outside my bubble with it. So that's a latent asset that I think can be beefed up pretty quickly.
And just the YouTube of that, like, I feel like there's a lot you haven't done for yourself on YouTube that to reach that broader audience. And it's so obviously it's video and it lends itself presumably very well to that. So.
Yep, exactly. So I think that's probably right in front of my face. Step one.
Yeah.
I think step two is I focus a little bit on my own courses for a second. So I have maybe 2 or 3 courses in my heart of hearts that I could crank out. And so I think I can do a few of those, and those would be good for like cash infusions. You know, if I can crank one out in a month or two and get a big launch, that would, you know, that could set us up for the rest of the year even. So I think that's interesting. So I think I'm kind of seeing the product mix as a combination of my own first party, basically teaching. So education material. Then the layer on top of that is some sort of training/consulting. And I think I could get like I did a team training last week for screencasting.com and it was a freaking blast. It was great. Yeah. Loved it so much. Very easy for me and I think very valuable for them. And like I could do way more of those. And so maybe I take the show on the road and I'm like, hey, look at these numbers that I did for Plant Scale. Look at these numbers I did for my own channel. Like you know, I wouldn't say this if I wasn't sure of it, but you know who I am, right? Like I can go to somebody that knows who I am and be like, you know who I am because of this.
You know what I've done.
Let me help your team do that as well. And I think that could potentially lay a good base of consulting revenue.
And I do think,
so that's kind of what I'm thinking. Product mix of products and consulting.
And I think the risk, there is overall fairly, again, it's like, I think if you were like, I'm going to start a SaaS, right? Or whatever, like the risk would be very high.
Yeah.
But I think with this, like, I have some rough idea, let's say, of what you were making at plant scale, and to match that, or, and obviously hopefully go beyond it, I think
to,
is
to double it. That's my,
to double
that's
it, my, as we talked about last yes. week, right?
Like double it and then double it again.
It feels achievable that like you could pretty, with the reasonable amount of effort, replace your salary at least at the very, like, if that's like the minimum
maximum
level.
With maximum effort, boy. Right. We're getting $1 million a year, baby.
But even if we go, baseline, what's the like minimum acceptable outcome? It's like, hey, I work for myself, and you know, I have a similar salary to what I used to have. That's like, at least you can keep going and working on stuff. Yeah. And then obviously the upside
at that point,
is much higher.
I have infinite runway.
Right, you have infinite runway, as they say in the business. And then
a term of art.
And then you can build on that. Yeah, but I do like the idea, especially of. Because screencasting there, it's like, it's everybody's loved it who's taken it. Yep. So it's just like a valuable asset, and having that asset work for you, I think would be really good. And then is a nice balance to like consulting work, which might have ebbs and flows based on the economy or different trending things or YouTube and chatbots and whatever. Whatever is happening in technology,
whatever comes
go up
next,
and down, right? Who knows? But then if you have like the baseline asset that's always performing at X, and then you layer on some consulting, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense.
And then I find more baseline assets to layer on.
Right.
So I have screencasting. I've turned it into, you know, I turn it into an evergreen thing, and then I find the next one. And I have a few ideas for what the next like evergreen broad reaching thing could be that I won't spill here. But I think that could be a thing. One thing I'm trying to think about is how broadly can I teach, right? Because if I teach something like, you know, integrating Clerk into Next.js, it's like, great, congrats on your 50 students, right? But if I can teach something like screencasting, or like maybe, for example, generic database, something like MySQL, then the total addressable market is just so much bigger. Yeah. So that's something that I'm actively trying to think about.
A lot of stuff in SQLite land these days. I could see the Aaron Francis SQLite angle.
Man, I wonder who owns SQLite for developers.com. That's crazy. I wonder who owns Postgres for developers.com.
I wonder if they're in this room with us here.
I don't know. I wonder who owns MySQL for developers.com.
Wow. It's kind of surprising that was available, to be honest.
Imagine that. There are lots of things on my mind. We'll see what, you know, I think I'm trying to execute on the things in front of my face first. Yep. Should I go down this route, right? Like I may talk to any number of these companies and be like, holy crap, I'm not going solo. I'm going somewhere where they'll pay me and give me healthcare.
Right. I like that whole series. I mean, I do think here's one of the things I've learned, right? Is like, I've always been looking for like the next thing too. What's the next thing? I should be looking at the next thing. Mm-hmm. And then like, I just realized, I had one good idea, and it's still the good idea. And so like, also being aware that like kind of like what you're saying here, right? Like, hey, you're really good at explaining database stuff to people, and maybe that's just the good idea. And like, let's just run with that in different angles and strategies and formats and whatever. And we can just like, obviously it's a beautiful topic that can be sliced and diced in 1,000 different ways.
Yes.
And so
we have not even reached, we haven't mined this vein for 1/10 of its worth.
Exactly.
Yet. Yeah. There's still a long way to go.
Opportunity there. Obviously getting into like vector databases, all this stuff with the AI stuff, like there's all angle with that. Yep. Like, so there's tons and tons of database stuff. Databases aren't going away. Everybody's going to need
databases.
Databases
aren't going
forever.
Away. Everybody sucks at databases. Everybody teaches databases, save for a few of our friends. They're just neckbeards. Like, they're lame. Right. They're like, I want to teach you how to be a DBA. And I'm like, I don't want to be a DBA.
Right.
I don't want to do that. Yep. And I say that with all respect to my dad, who was a DBA for 40 years. So, sorry, Dad.
It's in the blood. It's in the blood. I don't know if we heard that on the show, have we? I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, I don't think so. No, he was a SQL Server DBA. The best blood. To ever do it. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Now it all makes sense.
Yeah. I learned SQL from him at probably 12 or 13.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So, all right. So there, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. I love this plan. But again, I do agree also, like you're already doing, like take the meetings,
Yep.
Somebody makes you an offer you can't refuse, as they say in The Godfather, then that's its own thing and you have to deal with that, right? But and I still think there's probably some mixed opportunities there with somebody who like really understands you and is like, hey, listen, we want you for 1 week out of a month to really kick ass on our stuff, and we're going to pay you an outsized amount of money to do it. Maybe that even makes sense for a year to do something like that, right? And like, I mean, it's effectively consulting really anyway, or whatever. There's some, probably some hybrid things in there. So I definitely love the idea of taking the conversation.
Frankly, that is one of my, that's one of my thoughts on the consulting thing. And one of my concerns with joining a big company or joining a company is like, do you need this full time?
Right.
Like part of me feels, you know, part of me feels a little burned. Obviously I feel, I feel burned and a little bit, you know, betrayed and a little bit sad. And so part of me is like, I don't want to get into this again. But you know, a less emotional part of me, which is very small, I'm 80% emotions. The less emotional part of me thinks like, does a company need this full time?
Right.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
Again, I think it comes down,
that's something I'm thinking about.
Yeah. Cause I think it really comes to like what we were talking about before. Like, are you going to, as a company, are you going to make the commitment to real commitment to like 3-4 years of paying expensive people to really grind this out, to really juice the orange fully? Or is what you need to like be in the market, have videos for your customers, and things like that, which is not, you probably don't need somebody who works full time to produce those videos. Or you could have, like we talked about last week, like maybe somebody who knows how to put these things together, helps you put them together, a plan, and then you can have other people execute that plan. And even if it's like, they're not as good as Aaron Francis at it, like they could probably get to 80 or 90% of Aaron Francis if they have a good plan and are picking good topics. And
I think that, I think that is the most value that I can provide and the most value that a company needs is how do we think about packaging, topic selection, title, thumbnail, framing of the thing? Cause like if you just launch a new feature and you make a video that says we launched a new feature, it's like, nobody not cares, but there is framing that works and there is packaging that works. And I think being on retainer to like advise an existing developer education team is good. And that also skirts around the issue of like, is Aaron going to be the face of every company?
It's right.
Like, no. I simply
want that future. I want that future where everywhere I go, Aaron Francis, he's everywhere.
You know what? If people want to pay me to do it, that's fine. But I think the downside to that is like, I can't, I'm happy to be the face of every company, but I can't promote every company to like my existing audience. Right. Right? And so if, you know, a bunch of different, you know, if a bunch of random companies want me to be the face, like a, let's say for example a highly Next.js JavaScript specific company, like I'm happy to work with them, I would love that, but my audience that I currently have doesn't care about that, and so like you're gonna get a great video but you're not gonna get the support of like the people that follow me. And I think that's an interesting like limiting reagent to work around. And a way around that is to offer strategy and have your in-house person be the face of your company. So
let's build you a playbook and you take it and run with it. And I'll be there to help you tweak it along the way, which I think makes total sense. All right. I think we kind of covered a lot here. What are your, did we not cover something? Is there something we missed? Anything you wanted to get off your chest? Anything you got that we didn't cover?
Dangerous question.
That's why I threw it in there.
I'm
trying to get the content. I'm trying to get the clips.
It's good content, baby. It's good content. You know, I don't think so. I enjoyed working at Planet Scale. I'm bummed I don't work there. Jesse Hanley wants me to start a Planet Scale competitor. And I was like, I was friend of the pod, friend of mine, creator and owner of bentonow.com, which is the ESP, email service provider that I use. He said publicly, he's like, you should just create a competitor. And I thought, there is a 0.0% chance that one, I could do it. I just can't. No freaking way. I was the dumbest person at Planet Scale. There's no way. There's no way I could create a competitor. And there's a 0% chance that I want to do that. And he, you know, he's encouraging me to do the hard thing. And he's like, listen, running an ESP, which he does, is hard, and it's worked out great. And I'm like, I salute you, but there's no way that I could create a freaking database company.
So I hate everything about this idea for you, especially. but I will say, I absolutely love the pure vengeance idea of it. It's like, my business plan is pure vengeance. Like, that's my business plan. Like, I do love that and respect that aspect of it. I think that would be incredibly fun to watch. But I do think, I don't think it's such a hard thing. Yeah, you have to go out. I mean, you couldn't just start it like he's done with Bento. I don't think you could do that. I think you'd have to go out and get a bunch of money. And then you're CEO of this VC-backed thing,
which I think doesn't
really leverage your really skills and assets you've built up. I think that's like a whole different direction. So, yeah, I don't love that. But I do love, I just love the pure...
pure vengeance.
The pure, like, eye for an eye. Like, we're going fire and brimstone.
See, he knows the Bible. Yeah,
like,
that's classic.
See, I know. I got some quotes from the movies.
So listen, the way that I'm trying to get vengeance is I'm going to start working out a lot, and I'm going to get super hot, and then I'm also going to get rich. And then that's going to be like, ah, see, I win. You wish you could have me. I'm hot and rich now.
Or you're just going to be the face of every other company, and you're just everywhere. Yeah, and every time they're on YouTube, they're like, fucking Aaron Francis, God, he's on here
he's
again.
He's so hot now.
He's so hot. And he's on YouTube all the time. Ridiculous. Look at his hair. It's perfectly coiffed.
One time when before Jennifer and I were married, she broke up with me. And it was for 45 days. We call it the Dark Ages. I didn't count or anything, but it was 45 days exactly. And like right after she broke up with me, I bought a piano.
Okay.
Because I was like, all right, I'm gonna learn how to play the piano. She loves the piano. I'm gonna be super artsy and I'm gonna be this guy that like plays the piano and all the girls are gonna love me. And then we got back together and I've never played the piano.
I would have gone with a harp.
But Jennifer plays the piano, so it's
great. All in on the harp. You're doing YouTube videos right now on your harp.
Yeah. So I'm gonna start working out and get really buff, and then
I love it.
That'll show them, right?
Yeah, that's then all your plan. YouTube videos will be topless. You're already wearing no pants, but then you'll just have no shirt too, and it'll be a thing.
That's gonna be great. So yeah, lots of people have had lots of ideas, including start a competing database company. To which I say, no, thank you.
Yeah,
I mean, there's Taylor's made a lot of money with Forge. We've seen publicly. He's talked about how Forge is successful. Frankly, that's a wrapper on another. That's a wrapper on a bunch of clouds, right? And so there's a world in which there's some kind of value I can add on top of RDS, but there's no effing way I'm going to be on the hook for hosting databases.
The stress level.
I don't want to
like
do it. The stress level. I would watch Slack channels at Planet Scale, and I'm like, not my circus, not my monkey. Like, I'm so glad that I'm not the one that's like, hey, what's going on with this database? I don't know. Let's figure it out. I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to go make another video. So
I actually think what you're talking about is very Forge like in a certain mindset, right? It's like what Forge does is make it like it's a layer above this complexity. And this is kind of that similar thing. Like, how could you provide a layer above the complexity of like, how do you be successful on YouTube, or how do you?
Yeah.
Edit a good screencast, right? Like, this is a different format, but it's a similar mind of like, the value is that people want to do hard things with complex tools and in complex businesses, and you know things about that can help people do those things, and you're going to convey that information to them. And so there's all these kind of things that are opportunities out there in these regards to do that. And so I think,
and speaking to the stress comments from earlier, I think the least stressful product that I could offer right now is education. It is not a SaaS.
Well, I don't like the SaaS idea for you at all. Definitely.
This is not the time in life for me to have a SaaS. Frankly, like, one, it takes 1,000 years to get off the ground.
Yep.
And like, as we discussed, money was a big part of why I worked at Planet Scale, because they gave me a paycheck. And then like, I don't want the on-call stress, especially of a database. Are you kidding me? But even imagine the on-call stress of like
anything, any real application,
that people actually use in their business. So that's just, I don't think that's the right thing for me right now.
Yeah. Yep. No, I agree. And that's like, yeah, you can like always dial back the number of consulting gigs. You can always take a week off and screencasting will still be there. Like it's all fine. And you're not on the hook for anything. There's no customer support.
And there's, really, you know, frankly, there's like some extent to which I go down this road and become super into video and ideas begin to materialize for, you know, more pure SaaS plays. And I'm like, great. I can pursue that at my leisure, but right now it's not a good time to start a SaaS.
Yeah, I agree. All right, man. Well, I think
what else is on there?
We covered it pretty well. We hit everything on the list.
You go.
Oh, I was just gonna say, if you want to give an actual update on the Aaron Francis Studio of Light and Sound, like, just are you launching that soon? I know you seem like you got it mostly built out.
So the Aaron Francis Studio of Light and Sound looks amazing. I got everything built, everything's done. My brother-in-law and father-in-law are coming over on Wednesday to help me move this place where I'm currently sitting, to help me move all of this stuff over there. Nice. And then I'll be over there full time. So yeah, studio looks great. I'm really happy with it. I put in just tremendous amounts of work, like an idiot. Tremendous amounts of work during, you know, paternity.
During your leave,
Well, oopsie doopsie. And it looks great, and I'm really happy with how it turned out. One little human anecdote is every day my daughter, so my son and daughter are they're 2.5. They're probably 2.5 years old, and my daughter has started doing this thing where she asks us a lot of questions, like, how was your nap, mommy? And stuff like it. Because we're always asking them, like, you know, did you sleep okay? How was your nap? And so she started saying, how was your nap? How was your walk? How was the store? And now every day when I come home from the Aaron Francis Studio of Light and Sound, she says, how was work today, daddy? And, you know, I've realized that, like, being a dad is kind of hard because you just say, like, work today was great, sweetheart. How was your day? It's like, dad got laid off today, but I'm not going to tell you that. Right. Like, you don't know what that means. That's not your burden to bear. It's like,
she's a little young.
Work was really great. That is so nice of you to ask. How was your day? And that's just like, oh man, that dad stuff is real, huh?
So I have a very similar story that happened to me this week that will be fun to share here. So we were driving back from, my daughter rides horses. We're driving back from the barn and she's just out of the blue. So my daughter's 10. She's like, so have you ever been arrested? And I'm like,
one time I sold oregano and told him it was weed.
And then I had to sheepishly tell her that no, I hadn't. And I was like, almost bummed. Oh, I was like, oh man,
so
like,
this embarrassing. Is
gotta be a life goal. I gotta get arrested. I gotta work on that. I feel like,
oh man. And I thought I was a square answer. Yeah, you're so square.
No,
I mean, I've never been arrested either, but I did commit a federal crime on which the statute of limitations has run. If you're listening.
We didn't really research that. We should have researched that.
No, we really didn't. Yeah. But there's also no way to prove it. Like, I mean, who's gonna be able to prove
confession,
that?
But yeah.
I'm a podcaster. You can't take this. You can't take anything I say.
I don't know. Maybe this will be like, we thought it couldn't go lower, but then when the feds come, the FBI at your door, it could be a step down. Like,
God, can you imagine?
When you're like, Ian, can you get down here and bail me out? Like, can you get on a flight and come get me?
Well, I'd be like, Ian, start recording and then I'll tell you. That's what I mean.
I got to come get you at the jail.
Yeah. It'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Let me turn this into a true crime pod. Okay, I've got an interview in 10 minutes.
All right.
Starting the day of interviews, but I want to cover one more thing.
Okay.
First of all, follow up. Mary on Twitter, her last name is Perry. Great last name. Mary Perry.
Mary Perry. That is a good
name. Yeah, isn't that great?
I love parents. The weird place parents get into where they name kids like rhymey things or matchy names or things like that. It's very fascinating to me. I want to
love it.
Talk to parents who do that kind of thing.
Her name is Mary Perry, friend of the pod. She DM'd me after and was like, my last name's Perry. It's like, oh, that's great. So that's a follow-up. The other follow-up is, well, this is kind of not a follow-up. It's a brand new topic that's on the next podcast, but I want to talk about it now. Are we going to do a call-in show? That's a great idea. We got to do a call-in show.
It's an interesting idea. It's an interesting idea.
Oh, no. I just got the interesting in response to great.
Well, first of all, a call-in show is that, I mean, people have, they're not always the most fun if you get a bad run of calls, you know, like, I did have this idea. I posted, I don't know if you saw. So my idea for the call-in show, which we could talk about here, is like, instead of a pure call-in show that's like, we're live and whatever weirdo on the internet shows up and wants to yell out a phrase or something, like whatever. We structure it so that it's like, we record a sort of call-in show once a month, maybe, or twice a month. And we pre-bet the people and their topics, and then we invite them in. They get a segment, like maybe we do 15 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever. And we just do that. It's like more of a pre-planned call-in show. There's still call-ins, but it's more pre-planned. And then maybe we can break it up as like little interlude episodes of the podcast or something like that. So we can kind of cross-utilize it, other than just people who happen to be listening live at the time we do it or whatever. So I don't know. What do you think about that take on it?
I like it. That's an interesting take. Yeah.
Are people out there really interested though? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to that at all. I think I used to be a big Dave Ramsey listener. And then I realized he's kind of crazy. But his call-in show is great.
Is it good?
Because they've got a producer that vets all of the calls.
Yeah, like, of course. Yeah.
That's like, all right, tell me your name. What's your question? You better get to your question immediately.
Right. It would be fun to try. We could just try.
It would be fun to try,
Dave,
right?
If we line up where Dave's available and he can produce the call-in.
Producer Dave would have to like screen for weirdos and normies and tell them like what the vibe is. Like, you can't just come on and be like, oh, I have more of a comment than a question. Be like,
do you think though it's better as like a Spaces? Is that the more modern way to do it?
I actually, whoever said that, thank you. I think that is a pretty good idea because
I think
like,
it might be.
If I host a space, then a bar shows up across the top of everyone else's Twitter. And it's like, these people are on a space.
And we can still record it and like throw it on the podcast feed or whatever. So
exactly.
It's out there.
And it lowers the barrier a little bit because it's not video. And so people don't have to, you know, be on video. So it's
interesting.
I don't
think we let the people on video no matter what. I think we're the only ones on video.
Yeah, I think so.
In general.
But yeah, it would be... It'd be fun. I think it could be interesting. All right. I think it's maybe worth considering at the very least.
It's worth considering. I think it is definitely worth considering. It's definitely worth, I mean, whatever. We could just do one, right? We'd do one and we see how it goes and if people like it and if there's, I wonder if you
it'd
can
like,
stream to
Did you
spaces.
Ever listen to Car Talk?
I don't think so.
Oh, dude, you've
I did
got
used to
go
do
listen.
A lot of talk radio though and call in shows.
Old episodes of Car Talk are just the funniest thing in the world to listen to. They barely talk about cars and they just laugh the entire time. Go listen to a few of those.
When I was starting the business, I used to always listen to Mike and the Mad Dog. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They're kind of a Northeast thing. They were simulcast on video back in and
sounds whatever, like Shock Jocks Mad
it's
Dog.
Like they're like no it's a sports talk radio. It was sports talk radio.
Okay,
but they would get into other things, but
there's one down here called The Ticket that all my sports friends listen to. Yeah, and they're like, man, so The Ticket is hysterical.
That
and they
kind
just,
of thing.
Yeah. So that'd be fun.
All right. Maybe we'll try it. We'll experiment. I like it.
Okay. All right. Well, I got to go. I got to go prep my brain for interview day. So.
All right. Good luck. We'll get an update next week on how it's going.
All right. Well, everybody that came for the tea, please subscribe and stick around for the next episodes.
Yes. And, we will talk to you all next week. Definitely subscribe, follow. It's on YouTube if you want to watch our pretty faces. MostlyTechnical.com, at MostlyTechPod on Twitter, and MostlyTechnicalPodcast@gmail.com. We do already have a few feedback emails, which we will try to cover next week. Maybe we'll get more from this. It's going to be more of a feedback show next week. But
tell me what I should do. Dear listener, tell me what I should do. I'd be curious.
Comment down below. You got to comment down below on YouTube.
Make sure you smash that like and subscribe button and leave a comment.
Do it. All right. Have a good one. Later, all.
See ya.